views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Welcome into the Lotus Place on this Wednesday evening, the last day of the month of September. We are going into October. Oof, my goodness, the end of the year is almost here. Well, it is Wednesday night, and Wednesday night is our Women's Wednesday night, and we have a very special guest in tonight, a good friend, a very good friend. Of mine. I'm so glad that I've met her. She's an advisor to me and many others. Author of 3 books, working on another book, and I'll be so happy when she helps me with my book. And she's very inspiring, a survivor of domestic abuse, emotional abuse. She is now a life coach. She is helping so many others, and I just want to welcome her in. I'm not going to take up a lot of time introducing her because I could just go on and on referencing her many accomplishments over the years. So let me just bring in, oh my goodness, as soon as I start talking, and let me just bring in my good friend, Mary Whitney Sunny Love. How are you?
I'm doing amazing, and Sheila, how are you, baby?
Oh, I'm amazing also. Oh, my goodness. Thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us tonight. We had you on before, and oh, my God, everyone just loved your book, your openness, your candor. You were so relatable, and your story is actually reflective of so many lives, but so many of us don't talk about this. Tonight we are talking about domestic abuse and violence, emotional abuse. That's kept a secret in Black families, the molestation that's often swept under the rug. You don't say anything about it, but we need to go do some healing on this. And this is a great way to open up and start. Let's see, I think we have Mother Hattie here with us. I hope so. Let me just see. So Mary, just hold on 1 second. Let me see. Is this Mother Hattie?
Yes, it is.
Hey, Mother Hattie, how are you?
Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Hello.
Welcome, Mother Hattie.
Thank you.
We have Mary Ann with us tonight.
Yay.
Yes, yes. And we're going to talk about a very, very serious topic, domestic abuse. Also, we want to hear what Mary has been going through, because since we last spoke with her maybe about a year or so ago, Mary, you've had some more awards and accomplishments and workshops that you've been involved in, and I know you've helped so many young ladies as you've been making this journey to this new accomplishment, well, several new accomplishments. You're working on a new book, and you just received another honor. But for those people that are listening that may not be familiar with your story, just tell us a little bit about you and what inspired you to, or what was the impetus for you writing your first book, for writing Robbed of a Childhood, Raped by the System. Now, that's the name. Robbed of a Childhood and Raped by the System. So work us up to this.
Well, I wanted to say that the reason I wrote the first book was I was really filled with a lot of anger and a lot of animosity at my stepmother, really. And she wasn't the person who really started the anger. You know, I was being raped by two stepbrothers and my stepfather from 6 to 11. And then once my mother died when I was 11, my real father picked me up and brought me to Indiana to live with him and his wife. And that's when the physical abuse started. You know, my mom didn't really put her hands on me like that. You know, every now and then we'd get into trouble and things like that, but I wasn't being abused like that. And so I was angry about losing my mom, and, you know, she told me she wanted us because we were her father's children. And right then she had lost me because at 11 at that time, I believed I was already a woman, not a child, because I felt that had been robbed of me. So that's what helped me start writing the book. One day I was so angry, I just sat down at the typewriter and I just started writing my story and what was going on and the things I had went through. I didn't really know it was going to be a book at the time. I just kept writing and it kept growing. And then finally one day I had a financial planner friend of mine sat down with me and read it. He wanted to keep a copy of it, and I said, no, I want you to read it right now while I'm here, because I hadn't published it or anything like that. But really, it was too personal for me to just leave in somebody's hands. And another person had asked me the same thing when I read a little bit of it to her. She wanted to have a copy of it. But I didn't do that. And so that, to make a long story short, it ended up being robbed of a childhood, raped by the system, because I went through many other things that led up to that. And many times I said, some people don't like it when I say pimped, wimped, and simped, but there's always wannabes and those who believe they're really it as well. So that's what ended up.
What do you mean by pimped, simped, and I can't get it together, but just
pimps, wimps, and simps.
Yes, pimps, wimps, and simps. That's it. Pimps, wimps, and simps. And how did that play into your life and brought you to where you are now?
Well, I ended up working as a stripper, got involved in being human trafficked, and ended up in that world of what I call fast living. And so in that world, you run into a lot of different people. You have those who will torture you and control you and take you to places you never believed you'd ever go to. And you have those who say that's what they're going to do. But, you know, they don't have that kind of control over people because they don't even know how to control themselves.
And so, and in your daily life today, like coming through, and I want you to feel free and open to just share as much as you would like of your story, because so many people can relate to it. And in your book, I think it's, let's see, how many pages is it? I think it's less than 200 pages, and it's definitely a page turner, 137 pages. And this book is, it touched me so when I read it. And I met Mary through Mother Hattie, and I'm just so thankful because I love your book. I love your writing. And I know that some women and men can actually relate to some of the things that you shared here in the book. So I want to just kind of go into, tell us like, how did you begin with the workshops and coaching the young girls in the prison system? How did you go into that? And tell us about some of your experiences, if you will.
Well, you know, it's not that easy when you don't have a degree or just getting out there into the world. I just knew that once I had divorced my husband of what year, of 14 years, and he was white husband, you know, and I was an African American woman. I am an African American woman, and we were living in the suburbs. And so I left that marriage after 14 years through a divorce and ended up buying my home in the cities here because I didn't want my kids to not be able to learn how to catch buses, city buses and things like that because they had been sheltered and living in Savage. There wasn't a bus system at that time. And so certain times, you know how it is when people really don't want certain individuals coming into what they call their neighborhoods. But I say it's any of our neighborhoods who can afford to live in that community. And okay. So that's just how society sees things. They section themselves off at times. And so I brought my kids into the city by buying a house here in Minneapolis. And so I typed 90 words a minute at the time, but I didn't know computers. And even though my husband at that time was a programmer, he wrote programs, but he'd always tell me don't mess with his computer because I'd probably mess something up. He was really seeing women online and doing quite a few things that I didn't know until after the fact. But you have to remember, I was working as a masseuse as well. So neither one of us was innocent in the breakdown of our marriage. I don't point fingers and I take responsibility for who I am and what I've done. But to make a long story short, I ended up going to an academy in North Minneapolis, which is another small area in Minnesota. And I ended up taking microcomputer application one's program. And I didn't really want to be there because I had had panic attacks before that. And I didn't feel like I could breathe at times. And I was afraid to be around people because I had, segregated myself from society, kind of. And locked myself within our home. Yeah. And so,
I think you have to like stop and just go into yourself sometimes and just, you really do have to like separate for a minute. For some people, whatever works for you, sometimes I've had to do that before. That's why I can relate to that. I just, you know, I shut it all down and just only did what was absolutely necessary. But as far as like really engaging in a lot of activity with other people, I shut it down for a while. So let me welcome in Aja. Aja's with us, and so is Mother Dunning. So I want to welcome them in as well, and let everybody know that you are welcome to jump in and share with Mary or ask questions. If you would, callers that are listening, if you would like to ask Mary or anyone on the line a question, just press star 6 and 1, and then we will cue you in. So, hi, Aja, hi, Delta, and hi, Mother Hattie.
How you doing?
Hi.
Namaste, namaste. How's everybody?
Great. How are you doing?
Wonderful, amazing.
Hey, my long-lost friend, Mary.
Hi, how are you, Mother Dunning?
I'm fine. Good to hear your voice.
I bet you thought I dropped off the face of the earth, huh?
No, I guess you thought we were too radical for you.
I'll go there. You know me and Loki. No, I know how to be radical because you know me. You read the book.
great book. Yeah. Very great book.
Yeah, it was something.
Mother Dunning actually really wanted to hear you speak on the domestic violence because that's something that we've been dealing with for quite a while. Mother Dunning, you want to share a story?
Let me give three hot topics right quick. Okay. We had I'm gonna give you three domestic violence cases here one just happened last night and we had two happen It's been maybe a month, not quite a month. We had one man asked his wife for, the wife asked the husband for a divorce. The wife worked for the government, and the wife went to her job and opened up the office and was sitting there. Her husband drove up. She unlocked the door and let him in on her job because she was the supervisor, so she had to open up. So she opened the door and let him in. And I guess they began to argue. And she tried to run. This is what the workers, well, nobody was there but her, but this is where they saying the gunshots, how, you know, how they ballistic. Well, he hit her several times, four times in the back, and she fell. She tried to run. Then he ran. When she fell, he went over her and shot her, I think they said, three more times. Then he took the gun and put it to his head and pulled the trigger. Then this what make it so bad. The same family had another sister. This girl was raising her sister's kid, and her sister had four kids because the sister's boyfriend is in jail for killing her younger sister, her baby sister. So she was raising her baby sister's kid. So this mother lost two daughters to domestic violence because the other daughter was killed in 2009 with domestic violence. Okay, then we had another case.
Wait a minute, hold on. Now, with that case, because I think I may have missed something, let me just make sure I connect the dots. So the person that was in jail killed the sister that was taking care of the children?
Okay. That's right. She had a baby sister that was killed in 2009 by her boyfriend, just walking distance from my mother's house. It's not no more than maybe about, my mama could go out to her front door and just holler at the girl house. The girl was killed right there. She was killed in 2009. This sister that was just killed a month ago took the youngest sister kids in 2009, took all four of the kids and was raising them. This sister and her husband was raising these kids. Then this sister and her husband started having problems. This husband shot, and this girl was the oldest sister. This girl, husband shot her and killed her just over a month ago. Now, all those kids, who you think have all those kids from my understanding? The grandmother has all these kids now. Because this sister had two, and she was raising her baby sister kids, and the baby sister had four, and the young man that killed the baby sister, I think he went to prison for about like 20 years. He got 20 years. And that happened in 2009. Yes. Then we have another. Go ahead.
I would be willing to bet. I'm not a betting woman, but I would be willing to say about 80% that the grandmother is also an abused wife, or was an abused wife, because that sounds like a cycle. And it can't be a cycle, because this is what you grew up in. This is what you see. This is normal to you. You hate it. You despise it. But you're caught up in it, too. And you're more likely to accept it a second or third time, as opposed to someone who grew up in a peaceful home and the man never struck the woman, because they're not used to that. They're not going to take that and da-da-da-da-da. And people, a lot of times we don't understand that it has a lot to do with the person's environment. It's not that this person enjoys being hurt, but this is what they know. And sometimes the mother will actually hold her daughter up to give her strength to stay in the abusive relationship rather than telling her to run as fast as you can. You know what, Lynn, what's her name? Lynn, come on, I love her. She played the role in that Tyler Perry movie.
Yes.
Claire Underwood was beating that young actress, and she convinced her daughter to stay in the marriage.
Because of the money. Yes.
Because of the money. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I remember that movie.
I can't
We had another case.
Now, it was family reunion.
And that was black on black. That was on black on black crime I just told you about. Now, where I live, and I think you made a road over there while you was here visiting, my daughter-in-law, this happened right around a couple of streets over from my daughter-in-law's house, where a white man who was a professor, and y'all saw that on the news because it made the news, where he went to the college, and up in the Delta, he killed this professor at the college. Another professor killed the other professor. Then he came home. Well, he killed the girl. Well, let me back up. He killed the girlfriend first, his living girlfriend, for so many years. Then he drove to the Delta and killed the professor. Then he went on the run for like a day or so. Then he turned around and killed himself. And he called the police and told them that I killed my girlfriend and told them where to find her and everything, and he left a note. And that was white on white crime. See, white folks don't want to tell the truth either. They always saying black on black crime. Then we had a young boy last night. Well, everybody couldn't figure out why this young boy did what he did. But now we know. A young man last night, he was 16 years old, killed a 32-year-old man, and he shot him. Everybody was trying to figure out why did he shoot him. Well, tonight on the news, this man had been beating this child's mother. And the news said, the young man said he did what he did in order to protect his mother. Now, the mother should have left from that abusive relationship with her boyfriend. Now, her 16-year-old son unshot her 32-year-old boyfriend and killed him. Now, her 16-year-old son is being charged as an adult. But yet, he was on the $100,000 bond, and the family got him out today. They said he's out on bond. But look at there. Look how this child is going to be ruined because the mother had a boyfriend that was beating her, and the child taken up for his mother. Now, this child, he's going to be devastated with what he have done. And plus, he gonna have to suffer the consequences. Because from my understanding is, the man that he killed did not have a gun. I'm just telling you what the news said. He didn't have a gun, but him and the boy was arguing. Now, how would a 16-year-old get a gun and argue with a 32-year-old and shoot him?
It could have been anywhere in the house.
I don't think
it could have been anywhere. We don't know.
Uh-huh.
And okay. Here's another way to look at this. What if
the mother should have ran?
We don't know if the mother was trying to get away or not.
But no, what I'm saying, Aja,
the man shouldn't have been beating on the woman in the first place. Let's start there.
I know that. This is what I'm trying to say, though. No, he was wrong for beating her, but what I'm saying is the mother shouldn't have let it get out of hand this bad. She should have been got away, is what I'm saying. Now her son is going to suffer because the mother stayed there.
Don't put the blame on that mother. Don't put the blame on that mother like that. Because there are mothers who want to get away, who cannot get away, or who have gotten away, and the husband who has come and found them. See, I'm on the mother's side. Because I'm one of those ones that I wanted to get away. But I didn't get away right away. You know, because you don't always know what the circumstances are with that woman. Now, I'm not for these women that have these boyfriends in the homes and beating on the children. Now, I don't go along with that. I don't go along with that at all. I'm just saying, oftentimes when a woman is in an abusive relationship, and she's usually in it for a minute, or else it wouldn't be called an abusive relationship. Well, if he hits her once or twice and she skies up and gets the heck up out of there, then it's just one of those, he hit me. But usually, if it's an abusive, go ahead.
And that would be me. Stop me once. Bye. See you. Wouldn't want to be you.
Exactly. Exactly. These people didn't grow up in a violent home, so they know nothing about it. They the first time you strike them, they're like out. They're gone. The door kisses you. They ask.
Gone.
Right. Right. Then you have the women who grow up in that type of relationship. The mother may encourage it or encourage them to stay in that type of relationship. They have a low self-esteem. The man has gotten control of their mind and threatened them in all kinds of ways. I find you, I'll kill you. You ever see the movie called Enough with that Latino actress? Yes, I mean, she was running from country to country. Every time she got to some place, that man would find her. So there are always, you know, two, three sides to a story. So I just wanted to, you know, the viewers to hear, the listeners to hear, you know, another side as to putting all the blame on the woman, because she's gonna feel guilty enough as it is, you know.
And another side, you could also say from someone that has, like, been in that position too. And I get what you're saying, because it's like you think that people would leave, but again, there's so many extenuating circumstances, so many different factors that play into. Some women just, they don't have the emergency getaway fund set, which, you know, hey, that's something that you should have when you're in a marriage. You need to have a get up out of here fund, an emergency get up out of here, let me go get a hotel for a week, a month, mm-hmm. or whatever, until, you know, I can figure out what our next move is. You
right.
know, when he starts tripping or whatever. You know, I'm not gonna sit here and be arguing with you and you jumping on me and I'm jumping on you, because you jump on me, I'm jumping right back on your ass. That's one thing for sure. after that, you know, I'm getting up out of there. So, Delta, anything else before we take a break?
And then, you know, also, you know, we got a lot going on with the people that are going in the church now, where the
okay.
man just went in the church.
Okay, let's pick back up on that. I hear the music, okay. So let's just pick back up on that as soon as we come back, Delta. Thank you. And hold on, Mary.
Okay.
We're coming right back to you. Take a quick break.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Okay, and we are back. All right, and we have our special guest in tonight, Mary Sunny Love Whitney, author of three books. You better pick these books up. And Mary, be sure to share with us where people can pick up your books, Rob of a Childhood, Raped by the System, and From Hell to Heaven, Journal, Sunny Love. And what's the title of your other book and your upcoming book?
My other book, not yet.
Okay. So your other book?
Yeah, I wanted to say the other two are the one small one is From Hell to Heaven, which is just a journal, and it's on quotes and different things that help uplift people if they're having a rough day or didn't have anything to be inspired by when they awaken in the morning and things like that. And the third book is an incomplete story of a whole person.
That's a very good one.
And sometimes we think we're whole, and so that's why I had to write the fourth book too. Because I really wasn't whole yet. And I think, I don't know if we leave this world whole, but I think we're always working to supply that thing for us. And what is whole, really?
And what is whole? That's a good question that I would like us to dig into. Delta, let's wrap up our hot news topic for Delta.
Okay, this is the last one. And then also, and it kind of coordinate with what we're talking about tonight too.
Yes.
There was a man went in the church and he was saying he was hungry, and the preacher took him in and they set him down, and he asked this little girl for a hug that was 12 years old. The little girl gave him a hug and thing about. The preacher said the man asked the girl for a hug again. Next thing you know, the man did this before the whole congregation. He took the little girl and started kissing her on the neck and rubbing her booty in the church. Yeah. And this happened in Mobile, Alabama. And the preacher said, you can pull it up. It made the news. That's how I've seen it. And the preacher said that he believed God led the man there to his church. Because the preacher said when he seen what he did, he said him and his deacons went into action, and they took the man, and they handled him, and they said they held him there till the police got there. And the preacher said, and we're going to see to him being put away so he won't get out and do this again. So the preacher said that God led him to the right place. But I was saying, do God have to lead you there to the church for a child to get molested in the church in order to do his will? I don't think so. Now, that's just my opinion. I just don't think so.
I don't know, but because Mary Whitney is also a reverend. Maybe she can give us some insight to that, too. I don't know.
And that happened in Mobile, Alabama. And those are my hot topics for today. Thank you.
Oh, Delta, thank you so much for those hot topics. And they were so, as usual, dreadful and morbid, but very informative. now this whole thing, maybe that man was led to the
And also, can I say this? Can I say this black robe about the man? This is what the newsman did say this, and I want the newsman did say this. The newsman said that the reverend said that the police said they had looked into the man's past and said years ago the man was a good law-abiding citizen, had never been in no trouble with the law, had had a good job. And they said something within the last year, the man had been arrested 19 times. So what I'm saying to say this, something had to happen. You understand? Because they were saying they had pulled this history, and all through his life history, he never had been in no trouble with the law. He was a good man, good working buying citizen. Within the last year, he'd been arrested 19 times. So I said, personally, I'm saying it must be a mental issue. It's got
maybe
to be something
brain,
mental.
A brain tumor. Yeah, he may have a brain tumor or going through a nervous breakdown. Has he lost his job recently, divorced, you know, something like that.
Maybe
a diet change, medication. Thank you, Delta. Thank you. Let me see. So, Mary. Thank you so much for your patience. Share with us
some of your recent accomplishments. I know that you've been working with the young ladies, and this is what I always like to hear about, how you are inspiring not only the young people, but also some adults like myself through your life coaching and your domestic violence teaching. And then I want you to take us back through some of your actual experiences and how you were able to overcome those experiences to become the person that you are now, because sometimes people get trapped into that and they don't know how to make their way out of it, but there's several ways that you can. You just gotta work through it, and often we need that help. So help us all out here tonight.
Well, I just wanted to say, if I could, make a couple of comments on some of the things that was read and shared.
Okay.
And many people have questions about why do people stay in sick relationships.
Mm-hmm.
But what we have to look back over is, how was that individual raised? What was that person watching within their own households? And what role did they play within that family infrastructure when those types of things were happening in their living room or in their dining rooms or all throughout their homes? You know, a child lots of times replays and acts out the same behaviors that they watched a mother and father or couples going through when they were coming up. If there was abuse in the home, or if children are being beaten rather than chastised. To me, there's a difference between chastising our children and trying to keep them on the straight and narrow path than physically beating them and destroying their self-esteem and their core being. So I want to say this. 75% of the women who do get up enough nerve to leave an abuser end up murdered by that abuser. And 98% of the women have been abused at some point in their life, and 75% of the men. Violence is a learned behavior. We're not born beating people up. And 68% of the young men between 11 and 20 who are incarcerated today for murder kill their mother's abuser. And so many of us don't know those stats if we don't get involved in domestic violence advocacy or those different kinds of things. We just think people are out there killing others because that is something that drove them to doing that. All people don't murder just to murder. And we do have people who murder people in fits of rage. We know that. But sometimes when we have these young boys trying to protect their mothers, and the same thing goes if a young man has to step in between two women and be the aggressor on one woman versus another woman, that damages young men too. So we do know we do have a lot of same-sex relationships, and as an advocate, we don't knock any relationships. We just say what we believe is healthy and what we believe is unhealthy. We're just there to help change behaviors and offer resources and support. And sometimes,
you know, what would be interesting to me, Mary, is like those women that have they killed their spouses in self-defense. Is it state by state, whereas they're able to get off on that self-defense charge? I guess it would be if you could, you know, plead the self-defense charge based on the state law. And then I wonder, like, the, I guess the steps broken down by, or delineated by race, you know, like by race and ethnicity. Like, are there more women of color who tend to receive, like, a life sentence or whatever? Something like that, based for killing their spouse in self-defense. Is it more, you know, white women? Are they able to get off on their charge? Because I think I did see a special on NBC years back, and there were more women of color that suffer when they're actually in these domestic violence types of relationships, and they're not able to get off, and they were actually just defending themselves. Trying to protect themselves from a husband that was about to choke them to death. Hell, they
took a light, a lamp and hit him on the head or something like that. So.
Well, what I wanted to say is this. I won't state numbers I don't know for sure. I state the ones I know for sure. I can get research on that and share that at a later time. But what I want to say, what some people are saying. See, a lot of times, because of how we're raised, an African American woman may not call 911 as readily as a European or Asian or Pacific Islander or those kinds of other races, because sometimes they have not had good experiences throughout one's community to be able to believe that the police are going to support them in those instances. And we know racially, more African Americans are incarcerated at numerous rates than people of other colors, whites, and people of such statures. Okay, we have one and three African American boys who will be incarcerated by the time they're 12, one in six Latinos, and one in 17 whites. So that's the incarceration rate. We have people saying our children are going to be incarcerated. They started out by the time they're 9 years old, they are saying who's going to be incarcerated. So there's so much going on that's institutionalized racist standards to me that is harming society. So people are afraid to call for help because they think maybe their children will be taken and all different kinds of things. May happen.
That is so
and
true.
And so stats two. Statistical data, more times is collected in the European American or white communities than it is on African Americans. So we know those things too. So you can only report and censor what has already been put out there by the Census Bureau. So in our communities, we're not always in the numbers.
Yeah, certainly not. Certainly not. We were just discussing this the other day about polls, these polls that are only taking them off for certain demographics. But, you know what, let me welcome in Brother Brown. Brother Brown is our legal expert, smooth talker. Brother Brown, how are you this evening, Brown?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm on the road traveling, but I can hear the program.
Oh, okay. Well, we have Mary on, Sunny Love, and you remember her, Brother Brown.
How you doing, Mary?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
I'm just fine. I was listening to your statistics about the incarceration rate.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to find the right word to use. The statistics on that 1 in 3 status of black males between ages about 12 years old.
Mm-hmm. Are incarcerated by the time they're 12.
If they won't be incarcerated, what they will be, they will be in a system.
No, incarcerated. The Children's Defense Fund put out the report that gave those statistics.
What I'm trying to tell you is that the majority of kids 12 years old do not get incarcerated. Is what they call they will be in the system because they have been involved with the criminal justice system by that age.
Okay, so they'll be in the system.
It's not saying they're being put in prison, dear. I'm saying
right.
That they're in the system. Yeah, the juvenile justice system.
Right.
Like they'll have gone to like juvenile detention.
Yeah, and it's still detaining them.
Yeah.
And it's
still
to me
filed.
It's more so sanctions like probation. Some of them end up in boot camp, but not at the basic age for boot camp is between 16 and 18, or 16 and 20. Now there are some young men that after intoxicated in juvenile facilities, based on the increase in heroin traffic, because it's been deterrent in crack, human crack cocaine. But the thing about those statistics is that it also plays the education system in America, public education, plays a major role in that rate, because black males are disproportionately disenfranchised on the educational level, and due to certain different elements of poverty, and they are made targets for the criminal justice system. And once you become a target, it is if you have a big sign on your back, say, hurry up and lock me up. Because poverty breeds crime. And if a person is disenfranchised, they're hungry, lack of clothing, whatever reason, they're going to find a way to get it. And then them finding their way to get it, they may turn to the criminal element. You know, it's just like a law of survival in the jungle. You got predators that hunt prey. And it's unfortunate that our young males are the prey for the predators of the criminal justice system. Now, what I've been doing is working with young brothers, teaching them how to read, because that is the major element that these boys fail. By the time they're in the third grade, the average black male has failed twice. The average. So what we're doing is we're focusing more on what they can't do or what they're not able to do, and still saying, let's teach them what to do. See, when you got little kids coming to school speaking mentality at 5 and 6. That means, and I agree, that their home life is insufficient. There's something lacking in their home life. And I was working
with them. Excuse me, I had a question that I wanted to ask. May I interrupt?
Yeah, go ahead.
Mary, I had a question. I'm really concerned about the abused woman, you know, in the relationships that you refer to, and they get a lot of bad talk about.
Yeah, they get a bad rap because they don't leave, perhaps.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I mean, is there? I know there are places for them to go, but there's not, you know, just signs that says, hey, come here if you're, you know, a man is being beating on you. You know, so how do they know? Because that's one of the reasons why some of them don't freely leave. They're not sure where to go. They may not have the kind of relationship with their family they would like to, or they may be embarrassed to go to the family, because maybe the family told them not to get with the guy in the first place, and now they're turning their back on them. You know, that sort of situation. They may have been cut off from their friends, because we know that the man, there is a brainwashing done in this type of situation, whereas the person is cut off from their friends. So what do they... What would you suggest?
Explain that to Aja, because some people may not be able to relate to that. I can relate to that. Explain that, because that's very deep, because it's a strategy that they use separating you. So can you just touch on that? But anybody, Aja, and also maybe you, because I know you've experienced that. But some people don't know what that means and what that is all about. So talk about that a little bit, Aja, if you will.
Okay. So first of all, the man... usually the man in this type of relationship, he is sort of like the knight in shining armor, is how he presents himself in the first place. So he's won the person's heart. He's everything that the woman could desire, because he has molded himself to this person's desires, because he's already tuned in to this person's somewhat low self-esteem in the first place, because they target that. So once they get the woman all wrapped up into them, then they slowly detach them or separate them from their best friends, from their family, and from anybody who could whisper into their ear, because things are getting going to get to the point where, whereas they would normally talk to somebody. So first you got to cut loose the ties. They start with truth, and they work with that truth. They will say something that is true, like, your mother never comes over here to visit you. And this may be true. And this may be something that the woman has thought about, like, why don't she come over and visit me? You know, she go visit my sister and go visit my brother, you know. And so this is something that he's peeped out. And then he'll take that little bit, and then he'll weave this web of your mother, and he'll take little bits. And then the next thing you know, you're not calling your mother because you're angry with her because all this that he said is true. And then your mother proves it. You know, she proves it. You know, like, you know, this is something that I know. They may say something like, I notice you go and visit your whole family, but I don't ever see them come visit you. Oh, that's true. Why don't they come visit me? So they work on those little things like that. They may say something about your girlfriend. She was looking at me, you know, kind of funny, but, you know, I didn't want to say nothing, you know, because, you know, I know y'all tight, you know. And then you may say something to your girlfriend, and then she may say, oh, he's crazy anyway, because he's this and this and this. So then you have this little thing with you and your girlfriend, you know. So all the while he's being just the perfect gentleman, just the sweet apple pie. He's there for you. If nobody else is there for you, I'm here for you. And he's slowly, unbeknownst to you, cutting your ties with your people that you can run to when things hit the fan. And it's a brainwashing thing. If that's all you see, they may say, oh, don't wear that. You don't need to wear all that makeup. You're beautiful just like you are. You don't need lipstick. You don't need to do it. Look at your skin. And you're grinning and you're smiling. And the next thing you know, you're not wearing makeup because you're beautiful. Yes, and your friends are looking at you like, what the hell is wrong with her? And what is that she got on? Because you're beautiful no matter what you wear. You know, so all these things that are being put into your head, and then that's all you hear, because you're not calling your friends anymore, because he loves you so much that he just wants to just be in your face every moment of your spare time.
It's just me and you, baby.
Yes, me and you, baby. I just love you that much. You going to a baby shower? Aw, how long you gonna be? Aw, well, call me when you get there, okay? All right. How long you gonna be on your way home? Just a minute. Well, I should miss you. Next thing you know, no more baby showers. Because it's too much of a hassle. I just stay here with you, baby. So you're caught. You're caught. So when that first smack hits you, you're shocked, because this sweet, gentle, loving man that just did everything for you and brought you apple pie in the bedroom before you could open your eyes good, and juice and everything, and rub your feet and gave you showers and just did everything. Now he's smacking you for what? I can't run and call my friend because I hadn't talked to her in months. I don't call my mom anymore. She never did like him. I don't know what to do. I'm so embarrassed. And then he's sweet. And this goes on and on and on and on. It is so much bigger. And then you find somebody who has a low self-esteem, who has grown up with this. They've seen their mother be treated this way. They love their mother so much. They even love their father. But this is what they saw. This is their normal. They hate it, but this is normal to them. So it is not so simple. Some women will say, oh, the first time he put his hands on me, I'm like, hey, baby, don't, boo, 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 boo. I fight him, boo, 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 boo. I leave him, boo, boo. That's how you grew up. that's what you know. That was your environment. You didn't come up in the same environment as the person who stayed. Because they didn't watch their mother pack their bags and leave. They watched their mother take it and take it and take it and take it.
Can I jump in there for a moment as a man who saw his mother abused when I was a kid? Because I know exactly what you're talking about.
Okay.
And I know a lot of males can't identify with that situation from this standpoint. But when my stepfather used to abuse my mother, it was always because of jealousy. He couldn't cut her off from the family because we were just always a close-knit family. But what he did, he made her life miserable at home. And was that all you're talking? Hello?
Yes, that was Aja.
Yeah, and she's perfectly right, but that's the manipulator. See, the manipulator is not a man, he's a punk. Because any man, and I'm telling y'all this is this, any man that will hit a woman will not hit a man. That's a given fact, and I know because...
You're right about that.
Yeah, they are cowards.
They're cowards.
Right. Right, they're really cowards, and they stand behind this thing about this macho image. I tear his ass up, excuse my language, and I do it. But when my stepfather abused my mother, now I think I was in elementary school, and she had five brothers, and you know they talk a good game. I love them, they're my uncle, but I was the one that drove them out of the house because I had to live with that. I cried a million nights with my mom because I was too young to do anything. But by the time I got to 10 years old and hanging out in the street learning how to handle a knife, he hit my mother one last time and I stabbed him. And when I stabbed him in the buttock. And it scared him so bad that he peed on it. And I cursed him out. You know, my mother had never heard me use Spanish. But I was tired. And then I learned by taking care of her the rest of my life that nobody would ever, ever have that opportunity to hurt her. And I was her protector. And I became the protector of women. You know, and when you have a man, and I'm telling you from a man's perspective, whenever all my sisters out there listening, remember this. Whenever you have a man that does not want you to have friends, he is not the right man for you.
I know that's right. Yeah, that's not the one. He should still have his friends, and you should still have your friends. I had a life when I met you.
Right.
I'm keep on.
And whenever you have a man who wants to pimp your time, that's because he's doing something.
Whenever you have a man who wants to pimp your time
everywhere you go.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's because he got to make his own move.
That's also a part of control, though. That makes you more conscious of your time whenever you leave his presence. You're conscious of your time.
But Aja, I agree with Brother Brown. Look, 100% on that one. That is correct, Brother Brown. Because you
know, they want to know where you at.
They want to know where you at, so they won't get caught up.
I don't want to know if she's everybody.
That's the whole point of it. You don't need to be asking me where am I every 2 and 3 minutes. Hey, Brother Brown, let's take a quick break, and then we're going to come right back on the other side of this break. Right.
This is Brother Elliot, host of Time for an Awakening, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennium.
Okay, and we are back. And so, I'm going to bring...
I never get my question answered.
Oh, yes, your question. Thank you so much. Your question, that's right. We all digress. So, your question to Mary.
Yeah.
So, you know, is it common knowledge? Has the system improved the women who find themselves in that plight and they're ready to make a move? But they don't know where to go, no family, no friends, you know. How do they find out?
How do they find out?
Mm-hmm, where to go, that those places are out there for them.
Well, in each state, there are always 1-800 numbers, or there is one localized number. Here in Minnesota, ours is 211.
What does it say?
It just, whatever the service is you're looking for, they mainly have a list of everything that you could ask that would support you, from housing to employment to resources about graffiti or domestic violence. You name it. It's listed with 211 here in Minnesota as Women Planting Seeds, which is our small not-for-profit. I'm listed with 211. You know, I do the work I've done with them for free, but every state has its own number for those services. But let me say, if you don't know the number, it's like you don't know the resource, and who are you going to call? You know, and nobody stays in relationships. They have what's called the power and control wheel. And either you're intimidated in that relationship, to the point of, like you shared, some of the things you said, where you're isolated from family and friends, you have isolation, intimidation, humiliation, coercion, you have financial abuse, you know, and you know the emotional, physical, sexual, and mental abuse. You have all these different categories in these different areas where people are harming one another. If someone is cussing you out, belittling you, telling you they're going to minimizing you, telling you they're going to kill the cat or going to have your children taken away from you, they're going to turn you into this system or that system, and women are banking on the man being there to support them and putting a roof over their children's head and taking care of everything from, like you said, the massage to the highway. We never know what people are doing, but there's always a payoff and there's always a cost in any relationship. And what is the payoff? And what is the cost? What is the keeping agent in that relationship? Depending on the family infrastructure, how they grew up, what they saw, was the mother in an abusive situation, was the male? Because we have same-sex relationships, and you know it's huge now. You know, we've passed it where men can marry men and women can marry women. And we just say we support the person who's being abused in whatever relationship they're in. You teach them what's healthy and what's unhealthy, and whatever that family infrastructure is. We have caretakers, we have scapegoats, we had heroes. We had people who played different roles within their families. And so you're going to grow up with those behaviors, you're going to practice them, and that's going to become who you truly are. And so how do we help the families? How do we support each other? And I say the more we know, the more we grow. But so many times we're isolated with trying to raise our families and take care of children. And when you watch your mother being abused and being intimidated and sweet-talked and loved on and waking up in the morning like it was nothing that happened to them or hurt them the night before when they done got beat down to the floor and tore down. You know, I watched my mother being abused as a little girl all my life. I watched her cut and gut a brother, too. So I learned how to fight as well. I don't like blood, and I don't like alcohol. So it's mm-hmm. what we see, you know, but when I have to throw down, I threw down. Mm-hmm. I was taught to fight by my stepmother. If I didn't beat them, she beat me. So when wow. you have a 400-pound woman gonna whip you from 11 to 17, then you're gonna wow. fall down. And you're yeah. not gonna lose at all costs. Right?
Wow. Right. So
the whipping from her would have been worse than the whipping I'd have got from one of those young girls I had to throw down on. And when the boys would hit my brother, I'd throw down on them too. So that's just how it is. I thank God for saving me. And by his grace, I am saved, and it's sufficient for me. But it took a long time to get there. So we all learned.
Women planting seeds.
Women planting seeds was created as a small not-for-profit organization after I learned how to do the work inside an organization that put out millions for what's called supportive housing to help people with mental illness, HIV, AIDS, homeless, at risk of being homeless, and those on substance abuse. And every time they'd say hard-to-place populations, and I had to use that language myself in sharing resources and services as an intermediary, not a direct service provider, it turned my stomach because they didn't know my history and they didn't know my past, and really it wasn't their business how I had been raised, I told myself. So I wasn't going to share who I was or what I had done or what I had gone through because that wasn't my job there. My job was to go in there and, I guess, fake it until you make it in any society or any role we play in our jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So women planting seeds.
Go ahead, Mary.
Women Planting Seeds was designed as a not-for-profit organization, which we're a small not-for-profit organization to work with men, women, and youth exiting corrections. We provide soft skills as well as some hard skills for helping them reintegrate back into society successfully, not to set them back up for failure. But after you learn getting into the market, that as a small not-for-profit and me as the source of service provider, that people are not going to give you a lot of money whether you have a 501c3 or not if you don't have somebody who's going to fill in when you fall down or fill in when you're sick or fill in when you're absent. And so I got several grants to build the foundation of Women Planting Seeds and set the infrastructure. But when it came to services and those dollars, they would say, well, who's going to do the work if something happens to you? And I said, those I teach. So our mission is we're committed to changing lives and providing second chances. So we had to find our niche as a small organization and say we work with youth and women more so than the men, because there are resources out there for men as well as some women and youth too, but you have to choose which area you're going to become sufficient in.
Okay. Go ahead.
I was going to ask Mary if she's going to read a few articles out of the new book.
I could do that, but it's getting pretty deep in some areas. Where would I start?
And you know what? Mary, actually, also, I would love for you to read this chapter, just read a little bit of chapter one so that people can know your background also from
Okay, so why don't I start with that first?
That would be great.
Okay. I wanted to say that in chapter one, it talks about childhood memories and nightmares. It says, as a child, I was not very proud of my life, starting at a point that I can remember. I remember the day my mother decided to marry a man named Harry Creek. He was a tall, large brown-skinned man, very good-looking, at least to some who knew him. He had three sons and a daughter, ranging from 16 through 20 years old. The daughter was named Anne, the oldest of the bunch. Before my mother married Harry, I remember us being so happy-go-lucky, sharing a house with my great-grandmother, my mother, my brother, my little sister, and I. We sometimes got into trouble with Mom. She would go out to do things mothers have to do to parent her children and leave us with our great-grandmother. Our great-grandmother was somewhat crippled and couldn't get around very well, so watching my brother and I was extremely hard for her. One day my mother was gone, and we somehow found an ice pick, and we poked holes in 89 cans of peaches. That was just one of the mischievous things we did as children. I also remember my mother being gone another time, and my baby sister fell behind the bed. My great-grandmother was caring for her, and when Mama arrived back home, my sister was dead from suffocation. This was a horrifying event for us to experience. I don't believe I ever got over the pain. I just hid it deep down inside. I don't remember much about my real father before my mother married Harry. My mother was a thin black woman, at least about 5'3" tall, weighing about 115 pounds, with medium-length black hair. Everyone in this small country town objected to my mother marrying Harry. Love does strange things, even to the best of us. People tried to tell my mother how mysteriously his first wife had died, but she did not want to listen. No one could tell her anything negative about my stepfather. Well, they could, but it didn't have any impact on how she felt about him. She was so blinded by his smooth talking ways, she couldn't really hear what was being said to her. And as you may well imagine, my mother went ahead and married this man. Little did she know it was the beginning of the end for her. We moved to Harry's farm deep in the woods in Henderson, Tennessee, into a very large house, which was kind of scary. I remember I was always afraid to be alone in that old house because the walls were always squeaking and sounds came from every direction. My heart would race and pound as if it would jump right out of my little six-year-old chest. For me, the nightmare began on day two on that farm. That day, my stepbrother Willie waited for the others to leave for work to hoe cotton in Mr. Berry's fields, and after everyone was gone from the house, he began to undress me. Willie did not ask my permission to undress me. He just pulled my clothes off, and the ordeal began. After undressing me, he made me lie down and forced his large penis inside of me. I remember the pain being so unbearable. I thought I would black out. It was just excruciating, and I had to endure his nasty-smelling, odious body on top of me. I couldn't understand why he would do something like this to me. Mom told me he was my brother now, and I should love him as a real brother. Yet Mom wasn't there to hear my cries of agony. There was no one to cry out to but the Lord. We were located too far away from civilization to run next door for help. Our nearest neighbor were miles away, so it was too far to run or walk. Everyone else was at Mr. Berry's farm hoeing or picking cotton. When everyone returned from the fields, I was too petrified to tell my mother. I didn't have the guts. I was afraid to tell anyone because Willie said no one would believe me anyway. And I thought to myself that I must be a coward because I was too ashamed to let her know what had happened to me. Should I stop there? Ashira?
No, Mary. But I do want to make just a point there. And that's often what I think prevents a lot of victims from coming out and saying something, because the victimizer will say something like that. Who's going to believe you?
Right.
The victimizer is some prominent person. Just like you said, he was Mr. Harry. And how old were you at this time, Mary?
I was 6 at that time.
6 years of age, when you barely can really comprehend anything. And how are you supposed to be able to comprehend this this person on top of you doing something strange and making you hurt.
Right.
You know, just, and you know inside it doesn't feel right. But something is different. So, Mother Hattie, did you have a comment or anything? Anything you'd like to share at this point? You've been pretty quiet.
I don't. That just always breaks my heart so much to hear that. It's just, it's devastating to me to hear that.
It is. It's that and that's why I definitely want us to read that statement tonight, Mother Hattie, if you have it handy.
Sure.
You know, my computer just,
just let me know when.
Okay, great. I'm having Mother Hattie issues with my computer right now. But anyway,
here, can I say something or
two? Sure.
This is a lot of the problems too. And when the kids do tell, a lot of the mothers don't even believe. They don't even believe. A lot of them won't even defend their kids. And a lot of mothers would rather have their man and you know, have their man and disown their kid. Because if you look at Ellen DeGeneres said on TV that her stepfather was molesting her, and Ellen will run to the park and sleep on the bench. And so what I'm saying, her mother didn't get rid of the man. And then I also had a friend girl that used to call in a lot, and her mother's sister had two kids, and she married this man, and the woman had a boy and a girl, and the man was molesting the girl, and not only molesting the boy, he was molesting the boy too. And the young man, their stepfather had molested them, so the young boy turned gay, and the young boy eventually died with AIDS. And his family was hating him because he was gay. So the boy finally came out and told the secret. He said that he went to his mother and told his mother that the stepdaddy was molesting them and the sister. And he said that his mother turned her head in order to live that lifestyle. She turned her head. And when the mother died, nobody went to the funeral. Because you got some women, it's just so stupid. They were ready to have a man and let them take possession of their daughter in order to, just so I can say I got a man in order to be happy. I don't know what the deal is. But you got some crazy women now. We'll do that. They would just let the men take over and have at their daughter.
I think it's a psychological thing where we have to, number one, we have dysfunctional families. Okay, we already know that. You can't even roll with that. But my point is, when we're not raising our families based on nature and African values, we have to get back, and this is just my opinion, we have to get back the values that we once had in our home life, where the man was the protector and the provider. See, we have escaped those issues. And it is very unfortunate that our women, who have been victims since the day that they brought them over on a slave ship, have never been protected by African male. There was a whole dysfunctional issue with the protection of the black male. And my thing is that I always research post-slavery traumatization. You know, the behavior that took place was the abuse that originally came from the slave now. If we want to get some real good issues out of this issue, look at that movie, 12 Years as a Slave. Real, real good. a lot of our psychological issues in the black community when it comes to the dysfunctional element of males and females came from the period of enslavement, chattel enslavement that we suffered. And those characteristics have carried on up until where we are in the present because we have never addressed that.
Well, it's, you make a very valid point, and some people always try to say, well, that's passed over with. But what they're not understanding is going from generation to generation, the mindset and the mentality. And
right,
that so many men are having to watch their wives or their daughters being abused in such a way, and that control mechanism, and then feeling less than a man and incapable of providing for their families. And as a woman, I couldn't even wear that kind of mindset, and I'm not going to try and pretend I can. I have four grown sons and a grown daughter, too. So it's hard. I believe the world sees that it's easier for black women to make it than it is for a black man to make it in today's society. But I've learned to me through ministry especially that once my mind is lost and feels under the subjection or control of anybody, then I've really lost control of my full reality. And so I feel that I don't really want anybody to have control of my mind. And that's why I don't do drugs. I used to. But I want to be aware of whatever's going on in my life, because sometimes we try to self-medicate and get past the pain that we dealt with as traumatized children. But that hurt child is still inside of this adult woman. If
exactly.
I didn't face that, if I don't face that piece of my core.
Right.
And it hurts when we're in relationships with our male counterparts, because that's all I've ever been with is a man, is that it hurts when we try to subject ourselves to their touch because of the scarring we still hold from the childhood trauma we carry frozen in our bodies.
And the other point to that, the other point is, young males who have not been raised by older males and do not learn how to treat women. See, it's impossible. It's damn near impossible for a woman to raise a boy to be a man. But there are so many dysfunctional men out here who have never taken the role of being a father figure.
But he didn't have a father figure in his life, more than likely himself.
Okay,
either.
Okay, well, you know,
right.
wait a minute. I didn't have a father figure. I have never laid eyes on my biological father. But
did you have, like, any other male figures that
I had
there for, like, an example?
I had uncles, but only two of them were married, but. But three of them were married, the other two never got married. But I'm just saying, it was males that I encountered within the community that helped me to understand how to develop relationships with women. Because even though I was a young man, I was out there in the street, there were positive role models that were out there in the street. And what I'm saying is that nature of what used to be is no longer there. See, just because people had little shine houses or whatever we had in our community, that didn't mean that these guys, because they had to hustle and make a living, did not have values. And when we had older men to teach younger men, and younger men to listen, the values were placed in them. I learned a lot from being around older hustlers in the street. That taught me value. It taught me principles. You know, how to treat women. You treat women with respect, because what they would tell me was that you treat a woman like you want to see your mother treated.
Well, some of these men, they still yeah, don't, but they don't get that, Brother Brown, because I mean, I've even had to say to some men, would you want someone to do to your daughter what you're trying to do to me?
Right.
And, you know, I have to lay it out to them like that sometimes to really get them to see that what they're doing is really screwed up.
Yeah.
And let me say when you
yes,
go ahead.
Mary.
I wanted to say that we have those players, and we have people who are in the game I call life, who do have value systems, but while at the same time, they do teach young men how to hustle women and how to be good in that relationship, too. So using mind control.
Right.
Mind over matter as well.
Right.
And
each one teaches.
No, can I finish?
Ahead,
each one teaches one, reaches another. And
right.
Whatever you had a conscience, you had someone who truly instilled values within you, and you made a conscious effort and choice to be good to your partner rather than being abusive. And choice is there for every man, every woman, and every young person to make. Because the animals are the things that don't have choice. But we have a lot of animalistic behaviors going on because people are operating in that reptilian mode and their brain through their limbic system and can't use frontal lobe and reptilian mindset. Both at the same time.
I thought you were finished. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, baby. I'm good.
Okay. I'd like to introduce another aspect to what we're talking about in relation to long-lasting effects. Okay. We have been talking about the chakra system. Most of the people on this line, they're pretty aware that's what we are. We're energies, and we have energy systems running throughout our body, and we've got seven main ones that we, you know, normally discuss. So those chakra systems determine how we act, how we relate to other people, how we feel, our connection with the higher power, our intuition, even how we feel physically, our body aches and pains and all of that. So in relation to a child being forcefully penetrated, that connection affects the first chakra, the root, and the second chakra, because those two chakras are actually located behind the woman's vagina. They're in that vaginal area. So a man forcefully thrusting himself, and then the child themselves being in dilemma, being in shock, not knowing what's going on, the fear, and all of that happening at the same time. The root chakra is affected because it's down there close to the spinal column, and it's located down near where the vaginal area is that's being penetrated. It's against the wall, okay? And so we know that the root chakra is the chakra that is responsible for us being here. It's our body, okay? It represents the body, and it represents our grounding and our survival, our security. You know, whether we have a right to be here in this world, our trust and our stability. So a lot of us are not really grounded, okay? And that has thrown off that root chakra. And if your root chakra is thrown off, it kind of goes up and interferes with the other chakras. And then number two, the sacral chakra, it's located slightly below the navel. Okay, about 2 inches below the navel. So a man penetrating a child, his penis would go up into that area, and this is the sacral chakra. Now this chakra, has to do with your feelings.
It has to do with your relationships, your sexuality, your pleasures. Some people feel like they don't even, they're not supposed to have pleasure. They feel like, oh no, I won't do that. No, that's too, you know. So their sacral chakra is off. Their well-being, their delight, their emotions, their feeling, all of that is under their sacral chakra. And it has been thrown off or shut down or out of balance, moving too excessively or too recessively for a long, long time. And no matter how many relationships they go into until they face what this really is and what's going on down there with their chakras, it will continue to affect their relationship, and they will continue to have this disconnect. You know, so when a child is forcibly molested or even attacked, we have to take in consideration their chakras are thrown off. Their energy system is way off. It's way off.
Let's take a quick break, and we'll pick back up on how that affects children.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For live programming schedules, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
And so, Audra, you were talking about the chakra system and how when a child, and I never thought about that, put it together in that sense.
Right. It's a difference. It's a difference. Not just it's the pain, the physical pain, but the fear that that child has, which is obvious. But then even deeper than that, their energy system that's located down there, the root chakra. A child grows up with their root chakra possibly being blocked. Sometimes it's just closed down altogether, and the effects of that are terrible. They constantly feel like they're a victim. They're fearful. Sometimes they can be excessive in things and grandeur. You know, like. Buy expensive things and make it look like they're more than what they feel like they are. Like the guys with the big gold chain, and then they have these fancy cars that cost, you know, lots of money, but then they go to these little apartment building homes, you know, the two bedroom with five people living in it. You know, on the outside, they want to feel like they have a reason to be here, but actually they feel very insecure.
They need validation.
Because they're valid. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's
not having good grounding. Go ahead.
Brown was discussing earlier. I was trying to wait to argue it through. And I thought about, like Brother Brown said, when he was a young boy, how the men's on the street tuck them in. And if you go back and you listen at B.B. King, and you listen at Jane Brown, B.B. King left home when he was 9 years old. He left home from the poverty and from abuse from, you know, with inside the family. You know, I guess that he's seen as a child in the home. And Jane Brown left because he said he was not being taken care of, and he ran away from home. But I'm saying this to say this, what Brother Brown was saying. They said old men along the way when they was walking and when they left home, these men tucked them in and raised them. And you know what, years ago, you ever hear people would say, the old folks said, they would leave walking and they would go into another town and people would take them in and and instill value, but you can't do that anymore. See, back then, a lot of the older folks had value. You used to can do that. But now, and this is what we talk about on our radio show all the time, And when we talk about young mothers, it's all going back to when you go to having babies, younger and younger, and they're not getting that instilled in them because back then the mothers stayed home and raised the kids. Now it's nobody staying home to raise the kids because it's harder. No means to be found in the home to raise the kids. So that means the mother have to go out and leave the kids there. So there's no value hardly being installed along the way. Because I remember a lady told me, I never forget it, she was about 80 years old, 82, and she told me when her and her friend graduated from high school, they didn't know anybody. They graduated from high school, got them some money and got on a bus. And this is what they told me. One lady says, wherever the bus stops, that's where I'm going to make my home. And she was no more than 18. She said the bus stopped in Biloxi, Mississippi. And that's where she got off at. That was her. She said she didn't know anybody. She said she walked down the street and went into a black neighborhood. And the people told her where to go, and the people looked out for her. And she stayed there until she died. Another lady said she was going to New York. She didn't know anybody. But see, what I'm saying, back then, like Brother Brown said, people had values and tuck you in and help put you on the right track. But now, it's totally different now.
It sure is.
It's like the values are broke down.
I agree, Delta. Maybe we can get back to that. Like Brother Brown said, we have to go back to those African ways of taking care of grandmother and grandpa all together around us.
A thought just hit me what you said. When you said we got to go back to our African roots, but a thought just hit me back then. And what all that I was just talking about, take a guess what? We wasn't all that segregated then. We was among our own people. And see, and we wanted segregation. And what happened here, segregation came in and it really divided the family. And the white man
you
got
mean integration.
Integration came in. And it divided the family, and if you sit down and think about it, because they took the black man right out of the home.
Yeah.
And they took him out of the home, and they did it through the welfare system. You used to could stay in the home, and the people in the community came together and helped the husband and the wife when they couldn't hardly make it, and kept the family structure together. Well, the white man came in and said, okay, we're going to help you. But your husband can't be in the home. And he knew if he got the husband out of the home, that was a way to tear the family up.
Yep,
that's what they did.
Yeah.
But there is a book called The Globalization of Addiction that it took me a lot to find it. And it was put out in 2010, but for some reason they really don't want you reading that book because it talks about the dislocation, the dislocation of society, you know, like the Native Americans, the dislocation of any family being taken from its roots will never fulfill its core. Because people try to say drugs or because you're hurting and because you're trying to medicate the pain and this and that and the other, but they say they can cure this and they can cure that. They don't want to cure addictions. They don't want to cure alcoholism. There's cures for polio. There are cures for smallpox, but there's no money in cures. But there's money in treatment.
Exactly.
So it's really talking about the poverty of our spirits. And like I say, when we're robbed within the core of our being, and you can rob, it says there's a book by Michael Porter called Kill Them Before They Grow. It's such a little book, so you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
So one's own society will harm their own children mm-hmm. and communities' yeah. children and make them ashamed. And once that child is ashamed, that child never flourishes like it once did before.
Nope. And so it's dead.
It's dead. And so if you can kill the core of the source of who we believe we are as human beings, as people, then where's the function? You know, it's sad when society will say, just shame that little black boy or that little black girl at the library. And you as a white person will have control of that young man or that young girl. Mm-hmm. And from that point on, they're under subjection. And I was in a training when that happened, and I asked the man, I said, what do you mean by that? If I'm hearing you right, and I really want to make sure I'm hearing you right, so I'm going to repeat what I heard you say. You said that you're walking through your community now, and your community doesn't look like it once did because you're seeing lots of people of color. And you're saying this is your community. And so you're getting afraid. You don't feel comfortable as you once did in your community anymore. And so you're teaching people here in this room to be fearful of people who don't look like them. And what if that person that doesn't truly look like you didn't have any option to hurt you or to destroy you, but they wanted to live and raise and have their children have the things that you want for your children, and that fear tactic has set in, and then you try to exude your force over them, and you're telling people to scare these children before they can really get a sense of who they truly are. And so, am I hearing this right? And he said, you know what? He said, you're very sharp. He said, because that was quick that you grasped that. He said, but I'm going to tell you, hon. He said, it's better that you guys tell them about what's up than for us to get them. Because one way or another, we will get them.
Oh, wow.
And so man, when you know what? Kids in
Go ahead, man.
Once you get a child in that system, their life's never going to be the same again.
Oh,
you know
no,
that.
Never.
I know that. Let's be real
yeah,
here. And I'm not a racist because I have an interracial son and was married to a white man for 14 years. This is not about color to me right now. I'm saying this is a societal issue. It's a problem for us and our communities. And we, as a nation, have to begin to change the way we look at building our own communities, no matter what it is that we're race, the colors. And racism has been manifested anyway. It's not even a real reality. But the language is there, and we have to deal with it as such. But we need to come together and help ourselves and our children and our communities. And quit talking about what the white man ain't doing and can't do for us.
And
we can do for
that.
Ourselves.
Yeah.
And
also,
we saw this on, I'm sure you remember Serena Williams' father.
Mm-hmm.
It was a video. It was on Facebook. And somebody had retweeted it. And we talked about it, Ashir, where.
Black Rose.
Where he was, where the white man was interviewing Serena, no, Venus at the time. He was interviewing Venus. And Venus, the white man kept trying to make Venus doubt her. And Serena daddy jumped up and said, no, I'm not going to allow you to put doubt in her mind. He said, "This she's a young black girl, and her mind is being developed." He said, "Her mind is being developed." He said, "And I would not allow you." He said, "She answered the question. She told you what she thought, and she said she's not afraid, and she can win." And her daddy made the white man stop interviewing her. And you know what? And that is so true, what Mary just said. they will try to put something in your mind. And I'm going to find that interview of Shea and I'm going to send it to you because I think we talked about it and I sent it to you. Mm-hmm. And so that's true. They try to get in your mind. And like,
yeah, and we need to put. Go ahead, Mother. I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead, Mary. You go ahead. You
just but I'm just saying that we need to begin to, you know, let me say this first of all. As a mother who was out there in that world, and I was flat-footed in it, I didn't go to school until fifth grade either. And my stepmother always told me, you ain't going to be nothing, you ain't about nothing, you ain't got nothing going but your body. Okay, so I learned to use the body until I got some sense. But what I want to say is this, is that we can learn, and there is nothing that somebody else can't learn that I can't be taught, that I can't learn, and that I can't try to do better. I don't have to be stagnant, none of us. We can grow, but it's a choice. It ain't gonna be easy. We can become highly intellectual, or we can stand stagnant and feel sorry for ourselves, because I did that a lot of years too. I wore the victim mindset, because instilled in me was like, the baby said, I forgot her name. Asha. Is it Asha?
Aja.
Aja. Aja was saying about the chakra. I don't know a lot about the chakra. I've heard of it. But what I wanted to say is this. Fear is fear. Root, hurt, and pain and shame is at the core of one's being. And we have to get at the root of the issue in order to find the solution. Because if we just tap into surface, nothing's ever going to change. And if we go into the situation with the same mind that got us into it, we'll never get out of it.
Oh, my goodness. That is so
good. Okay. And so we need to have a different mindset, put on a new set of lenses, and see what's out there that needs to be seen. Quit closing our eyes and our hearts to the truth. Because until we begin to get real and serious about the condition of families and society, nothing's ever going to change. We do have racist things happening throughout this world, and we know it. But nobody wants to talk about that power and privilege. And we got people who believe every day just because of their color, they're privileged over us. But who told them that? Somebody in their family told them that. But the God I serve said the last shall be first and the first shall be last. So that changed my mindset. I'm not going down into the ground anymore. I'm looking up. And we really need to start teaching our kids to look up rather than looking subservient.
I mean, I'm
it's a mindset.
It really is how you perceive yourself. It is
yes,
how you
it is.
Perceive yourself.
But when you're taught to be shamed and when you're taught to feel worthless, you will be worthless. When you're taught to believe that you have nothing, you will never have nothing. Mm-hmm. Unless you change that mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And people speak words into our lives and end it.
People what?
I'm sorry. I said people speak death or life into your life. And we speak it to ourselves. And
that's
the
right.
word says.
We, our words are so powerful. There's a song that India Arie sings, and she speaks to that, and I love that. She says, the words that come from your mouth, you're the first to hear. Speak words to life, and you will be there. I love it, love it, love it. We only have about 10 more minutes left, and I would love for Mother Hattie to read the Women United statement referencing the violent attacks against women. And then, Mary, if you could read us a little bit more of Mother Dunham wanted to hear a little something from your new book. So if we could just maybe get a quick sample from your
new book, and then let people know how they can reach out to you and purchase your book as soon as Mother Hattie gives us the statement. Come on with it, Mother Hattie.
Okay, this is a working statement from Women United regarding the attacks on black women, such as Rakia Boyd, Ayanna Stanley Jones, Sandra Bland, and many others. Women United denounce and detest the vicious attacks on black women that we've been historically plagued with and that seem to have escalated in more recent times. We are 100% human beings and deserve to be protected and with equal justice under the law and other entities. The recent vicious behavior and disrespect of the lives of black women must stop. These are unconscionable, deplorable acts and actions occurring in a country that considers itself to be civil and democratic. A plan of action must be adopted and implemented immediately to stop the terror on black women. Women United is placing a call to action for all women groups, organizations, and men to rectify these crimes against the humanity of black women. To make your statement and act to protect the humanity of our sisters, contact Women United at women.united7777@gmail.com or view our website at womenunited7777.org. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mother Hattie.
Thank you.
Yes. And you can also go on the Facebook page, follow Women United on Twitter as well, and on Instagram. So, Mary, thank you. Thank you again, Mother Hattie. Thank you, Delta. Thank you, Anja. Thank you, Brother Brown. Any closing comments? And then Mary will take us out by sharing some more of her reading with us. Any questions or comments for Mary?
No, we will have our next show on Friday night. Please join us at 9 o'clock.
Yes, thank you, Delta. And you know, that's our relationship show. So, Brother Brown, what about you, Brother Brown? Some closing legal thoughts. What can women do? What would you suggest if a woman is in an abusive relationship and that man is beating her right then and there? What should she do, Brother Brown? Where can she go? What are her resources?
I don't think he's
I think Brother Brown is this. Oh, that's right. He's traveling. I think he said that he is traveling.
Yeah,
so let me pose that question to you, Mary, because say you're in Minnesota, there are quite a few, I know, immigrants there in Minnesota. You said people can call 211, but when you call like those 411 and 211 numbers, you have to sit there and listen to everything from the library.
I think everything I've ever asked them, I didn't have to listen to a long list of anything. I just dialed 211, told them what I needed, and they took care of the need with a list of resources.
Okay. And then, like, crisis centers.
Huh?
Go ahead, Aja. So when you dial 211, you get a live voice?
That says,
yeah. What is your... Okay, see, we don't get a live voice. We get a recording. And
no, because you couldn't get the resources you wanted just with that, listening to that menu every time I called it. But maybe the hours I called it had something to do with it, too. I've never really dialed it in the wee hours because I have resources myself that I share with people no matter what time of day or night they've called me. Because really, ladies, everybody has my personal cell number, the ones I go visit in the prisons, the ones I visit in community. Everybody has my number, and it can really be found online. It's on my website. That's my personal cell
number. And some of those lines have 24 hours, too.
Yeah, and mine is.
Yeah, most of them have 24 hours and 7 days a week.
Yeah.
Well
not most of them. Not all of them. Some of them don't. And they won't give you resources either. Some people want to be paid. But it just depends on who you call it.
So there is
So the an ideal thing would be to have a number that a woman could call in an emergency and be able to say, I need help out of here right away.
Yeah, and there's a, like, Tubman Family Alliance who's connected with Chrysalis. You can call them too, 825-000-612.
Wait a minute, Mary. And they will get... Say that again.
Oh, but that's only in Minneapolis. You know, that's only in Minnesota, the one I was given. Okay. I didn't give the national one because I don't have it at the top of my head right now, but I can give it to you guys at another time and text it to you. But
what,
I'm
what
saying
is it,
here in Minnesota is called Tubman Family Alliance. They can call 24 hours a day, and it's 612-825-0000 is what I believe that number is. And they will tell the woman where the nearest shelter is, where the nearest source, you know, is that they can walk into and be taken mm-hmm. care of. I didn't know any of that stuff when I was going through my abuse. But
yeah,
I didn't
a lot
know
of
if you guys wanted
what
me
to do,
to,
you know.
To read a little piece from my new book or not, because I think
yes.
I don't have time to do it, probably.
Yes, just a little piece from your book would be wonderful. But I think I would like to say, too, if there is a woman that is listening, or you hear this show, if you are in an abusive relationship or some of the, I guess, signs that we delineated in regards to an abusive man, like him trying to ostracize you from your friends and family and build up this distrust of friends and family, that's one sign. Then beware, and maybe you should think about an exit plan, or at least have that exit money and have that little exit bag, have that hotel money or that emergency friend whose home you can go over to and stay. So I just want to say that. Anything else, Mary? What would you suggest?
Because well,
you've been with well, the crisis females and situations.
I just wanted to say that, you know, there's always a church or a congregation or someone in that community that a person can go to or talk to. A clergy, you know, a friend, a sister, a brother, a cousin, an aunt, an uncle, somebody, a teacher, a mentor, somebody they can talk to. And they can always go to www.sunnyllovellc.com, and there's a form. They can just shoot me a message or send a comment, and I will answer it. And if it's a particular state, I will find out some of those resources and share them with them. I don't think anybody should be without a source, you know, and everybody needs to be able to. Yeah, it's very important. And my number is 612-558-5721. Just like I said, it's on the website anyway. So I just want people to always be able to call for help. Because we never know the day we can help save a life. We may not be the one doing the intervention, but there's always some intervention we can refer them to. So I think there's always a source, but you have to know the source. Because you can't get help if you don't know where it is.
Right.
And no one deserves to be abused, misused, neglected. You know, and people are talking about the ACEs right now, adverse childhood experiences. Everywhere we go, that's all we hear about. That's the new click out there, or the new, what do you call it, acronym that they're saying. But those are lies that they're talking about,
mm-hmm.
you know, and everybody's life does matter.
Well, Mary, we didn't get a chance to read any another.
No, that's okay.
We'll have to have you back. So that means
all
you
right.
Have to so thank you so much. We appreciate you and love you. And
love you guys. Thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Bless.